thank you for subscribing to Podcast One Premium. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen, and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on PodcastOne.com. And for that, you're welcome.
There is the cue. So did you see, young man, that a Secret Service agent was asked if he would take a bullet for President Trump? And he said no.
Well, you're close. A Secret Service agent went out on his own and said he would not take a bullet for Trump. And he did it on social media. Here's my only takeaway. Well, first off, I suppose it's better that that we know that now than after shots were fired. But secondly, my only takeaway on that was, you know, the power of social media. Who would possibly go on there and make a statement, particularly that will directly impact their job and their livelihood, and think that they could share that internal thought in that platform and not have blowback? I mean, all the people that I see that do that, and it's been happening for some time since this whole social media wave took place, but they're kids. Some kid goes on there, whether it's a selfie that they later regret forever, whether it's a kid that was broken up with in school and lashes out at the ex, it's never a person of intelligence. And I would hold somebody in the Secret Service to a great level of intelligence. And it's like, why would you share an internal thought on a social media page and then blast that out to the world when it is in direct contradiction to the vow that you took for your own livelihood? That was my takeaway. You can leave the president and the politics and the whole bit out of it. It was just, hey, that was a really dumb move, and I would think that you're not a dumb person.
Social media is kind of like poor people have these gas stoves, and when you turn them on, it takes a while for them to get hot. It's like a little ring, and it takes a while. You can't see if they're hot. So a lot of times you'll just put your finger on it, and you'll burn your finger.
Yeah.
Social media is kind of like that.
Yeah, it's a weirdest thing. And, you know, I also hate the delete. I've never liked the delete. And so many people have said things publicly and then tried to act like you could just turn the pencil over and hit the eraser. But it doesn't work that way. Once you say it and it's out there, double down. Leave it out there. And if you're going to respond to it, double down. I've never seen anybody delete something and have that work as a good PR cover-up. I've seen people apologize, run it back that way, but just to delete and act like it never happened and there's not going to be some kind of a retribution or fallback, it's just a very amateur move. And for the longest time, it was moves that were made by kids. You know, there was all sorts of stuff. Hey, parents, should you even let your kids have these social media pages? Because they were kids' moves. Now you're talking about an intelligent, educated adult that went out, shared an internal feeling publicly, and thought he could just turn the pencil over and erase it by hitting the delete. But man, that's out there. What part of it does he not know? That's more concerning to me. Does he not know that this is going to be seen by the world? Does he not know that this is going to be a major red flag? Does he not know that there's going to be repercussions? Or does he not know that once he hits send in the world of cyberspace, there is no such thing as delete? That's what was more concerning and disappointing to me. That's the reason I would want to take him off the job. I just have to look at him and go, hey, you're not very smart. You know, we got a lot of moving parts here to protecting somebody. It's the leader of the free world. We need a level of intelligence that you've demonstrated you don't have. That, for me, was the real takeaway.
I'm staying away from this thing.
It's not even a hot button topic.
Well, I was gonna just start talking about the marches and everything, and I'm just staying away because I don't know enough about it. But I do have a good 8192 story for you.
All right.
So back in 85 to 87, I went to Southern Illinois in Edwardsville, and I wrestled there with some bad boys, and a couple of them several years ago had passed away. Rob Clarkson and Danny McGinnis. Danny McGinnis was real close to me. He was actually one of my groomsmen in my wedding. Danny was a great, great guy. I was also an All-American at Southern Illinois, I believe, at 158 pounds. Danny was a tough old boy. So I'm going in 1992. I am going to, well, let me go to Rob Clarkson real quick. Rob Clarkson was tough. I think he was a 42-pounder and a great inside trip. Fantastic inside trip. So Danny comes out and sees me. I'm now at the University of Kansas in 1992. He comes out, and in Lawrence, Kansas, there's the football stadium. It's on the bottom of a hill. I lived right across from the football stadium in these apartments, and the bars were at the top of this hill, about half mile from my apartment. So it's about 6:30, 7 o'clock Friday night. Me and Danny are not, we are not oiled up, either one of us. We have no oil in us. We're going to get oiled. We're going up to the bar. And we start walking. It's actually later than that because it's dark. So it had to be around 9 o'clock. So we start walking up to the bar, and we hear these three guys yelling at us. And they're yelling. And to this day, right now, I do not know what it meant. They say, "Are you chill, motherfucker?" And now they get out of the car, and now they start walking towards us. I find out later these are three football players for the University of Kansas. And these guys are huge. I mean, I'm probably 200 pounds at the time. Danny's probably a buck 75. And they come up on us, and they're within striking distance. And they're yelling, "Say you're chill, motherfucker." And Danny's to the right of me. There's three dudes straight across. There's huge dude right across from me. Another big dude on the other side of him, and another big dude on the other side of him, so right in front of us. And they keep saying, "Say you're chill, motherfucker." And I just don't know. I don't know what that means, but I know I'm not going to say it. So finally, Danny blasts a double across me, past the huge, huge dude, and flatbacks dude on the left side of me. Well, now it's on. So I've got big dude. I grab big dude, getting over under, and hit literally the only inside trip I've ever hit in my life. He flatbacks. And me and Danny start going to work on these boys. Well, we got the third guy. We got the third guy, and he's running back and forth and kicking and punching and doing whatever. But me and Danny know, you know, stay with the one you got. So put the wood to the one you got. So we're doing that, and frat dude comes out of nowhere. Frat dude comes out of nowhere and takes care of the number three guy. And cops come. And this is back before everybody has to go to jail for beating somebody up or getting in a fight. And they ask us, you know, "Here's what happened. There's people, yeah, these guys came. They didn't do anything." They asked us if we want to press charges. And we said, No, that's okay. They got what they had coming to them. And so me and Danny start to leave, and I'm like, "Danny, why did you shoot that double straight across? Why didn't you just blast that big, huge dude with
the guy
double?"
Closest to him,
yeah,
right?
Who was the biggest guy? And he said, "Well, I knew you had him." And then he paused and he said, "Soup, goddamn, did you see the size of them?"
All right.
So this is a little memory for Danny McGinnis and Rob Clarkson. They they had posted something on the Facebook today to commemorate them. So I thought this would be nice to tell a story today.
You are about to participate in a great adventure.
Something I can see turning out of that black hole of the eyes. It might be a face.
Wanted more of the best in paranormal talk radio? Podcast One and Jericho Network answered. Now, five nights a week, Beyond the Darkness. Subscribe now.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Jail Sonnen.
All right, listen. So I'll tell you, one of the smartest guys that I know in all of MMA is Glenn Robinson. And Glenn Robinson jumped into this space with the Black Zillions. Now, a lot of this started with a personal beef with Dan Lambert, and it formed this rivalry. And while these guys had this rivalry that was between them, everybody else that was around them reaped all sorts of benefits. I mean, the entire industry grew, from the gyms growing to coaches having a place to fighters having somewhere to stay, all the way up to the UFC, who put these guys' rivalry on display on a season of The Ultimate Fighter. Glenn Robinson is with us now. And Glenn, my first question to you as a very smart man is, what in the hell were you thinking getting involved in MMA?
Listen, Chad, I don't want to terminate you.
I've already been terminated.
Listen, you know, sometimes something seems to be a good thing, doing good things for good people, and then you realize you accidentally slept with a prostitute and had herpes.
Yeah. Hey, MMA is just such a rough and relentless world. And, you know, I've seen so many good guys like yourself come in it and leave a little bit scorned, where you look around and go, wait a minute, this is the gratitude I get. Now, I'm guessing, but I imagine you've had to feel a little bit of that over the years.
Not so much over the years, but over the last, like, 8 months. Over the last 8 to 10 months, I felt it. And, I was sick last year, and everyone took that as a sign of weakness, and came back to a lot of problems. Look, like, you know, life is full of problems. It just is what it is. You deal with them. And, you know, just there's certain people that were undermining what was going on. They had different goals, and I'm talking about some, you know, Henry Hooks, who's the stretching coach. He didn't really want to stay, and he knew that a long time ago. So I had the fighters warning me, like, forever that Henry was going to leave one day because his contract expired this past December 31st. And but he was so close with the fighters because he spends 4 hours a day with them. I don't spend 4 hours a day with them. So he tells them what to do, no matter what it is, good or bad, and they do it. And so not all of them are like that. There's a lot of guys that think for themselves, and there's a lot of guys that just believe so much in him that they don't want to rock the boat with him. I've had comments such as, look, I don't, you know, like a couple of fighters left me recently, and one of them said, I don't want to leave you, but I'm under a lot of pressure at the gym. So, you know, the truth is that MMA is not about the truth. MMA is not there's no truth involved. It's about what people say is the truth. And then what people say is the truth half the times is what they think is the truth. But rarely do they ever get to the real truth.
Sure.
So I see these headlines. I'm sure you read them about yourself, and you're just laughing at them. Like, and no matter what I say, they're not, they don't, because, you know, it's become like TMZ. Good news is not good news. Bad news is good news. Bad news gets click-throughs. Bad news gets traffic on websites. Bad news is what they want. They don't. Good news, like, hey, something great happened. Okay, it's, you know, but bad news, man, that's something. They could feed them.
So
this industry is growing on bad news. It's growing on the wrong foundation.
So, Glenn, tell me this. I'm on the other side of the country, and I observe Black Zillions largely through my television set. You built this incredible stable of fighters. When The Ultimate Fighter came about, I mean, the facility and the gym and the coach, it was just gorgeous. Absolutely state of the art. Is it same with your rival, ATT? I mean, you guys really, you know, your rival really raised up absolutely everybody around you, and particularly that geographical location of Florida, but the entire industry. So I'm listening to I was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani a couple of weeks ago, and right before I came on, Rashad was on. So the way that works as a guest is I'm in the queue and I'm listening. I'm listening to Rashad talking, and he shares with Ariel Helwani that, hey, you know, the Black Zillions have kind of disbanded. And I was never clear on it because I didn't get to ask any follow-up questions. I was just a guy eavesdropping on Ariel and Rashad's conversation. I'm thinking, now what does that mean? The team is splitting up. The gym is closed. I never knew where that was at. I had my own fight coming up. Glenn, I've never been updated. What is the state of the Black Zillions?
It's not really an exciting story, but here's what happened. Back about 2 years ago, I sold the facility and we were going to move to another location, the fighters. We were going to leave the CrossFit and everything with the guy who bought it, and we were going to move to a different facility. Guy got poked out of his mind and disappeared, and I had to end up jumping back in to take it over. When I did that, the guy that took it over from me tried to turn it into a CrossFit gym and let go of 2,100 members that paid $30 a month. So the revenue when I came back in was way down in consideration to what it used to be. The revenue was, you know, was huge before I left. And I started working to build it back up, and because I was still in the personal guarantee for the lease. And he didn't take it because we were still trying to get that worked out, but he was already taking over the facility and he was already paying the bills, and then he just kind of disappeared on me. And so I jumped back in. We started rebuilding it. But, you know, the rent was crazy. The rent went up to like $35,000 a month.
Wow.
And
that's a big nut.
But when you're doing like seven times that in revenue, it's okay. But when you're not, it's not okay. So recently, I was pouring money into it left and right. And everyone knew that. Fighters knew it. Coaches knew that. Everyone knew that. And the payroll, there was a lot of, you know, whatever it took. I did whatever it took to get everyone what they needed. And so some guy comes along and says to me, hey, I own the gym around the corner from you. It's just an everyday gym. But when your old guy let go of all your members, they came to my gym. So I need a bigger space. And I'm willing to take over your personal guarantee and the lease and buy you out of this. I said, hey, that sounds fucking awesome to me. He wanted us out really October 1st. He did his part. The guy bought it, kept his word. And AJ had his fight coming up in this December with Daniel Cormier. So I told everyone we were going to have to move to a temp location. I found a lease, a bigger space. We were going to even make it more state-of-the-art. And so I told everyone we're going to have to move to a temp location for a few months. So, but I pushed the process as long as I could because I didn't want to disrupt AJ's training. But on Black Friday, the guy's like, look, I got to start moving. So we moved over to another gym temporarily. And Tiago still tried to take over the team behind my back. He basically trashed me to the fighters and told everyone he's in charge. Well, next day they didn't come anymore, and Tiago went to King's MMA. And after that, we talked to Vitor Belfort, and we said, hey, Vitor, can we use your gym temporarily? Because it's kind of all getting screwed up right now. Vitor's like, yeah, sure, no problem. Because, you know, Vitor's a good guy, but we couldn't come to any kind of reasonable terms with him. And, okay, so that fell. So we stayed training where we were, and that, you know, we made up with people, and we stayed training where we were. Half the team stayed there, but half the team was already training with Henry at another facility way before even the temp location came up. Henry was doing their stand-up over there and only coming to our gym to spar. So even though his contract didn't end until December 31st, he was training over there 6 months before. He was training the guys over there, and they were kind of caught because some guys didn't want to go over there, some guys did, and they were kind of caught. So Rashad has been, he trains in a lot of different locations. Like, he'll do strength and conditioning with one guy, and he'll sometimes wrestle with Greg Jones. Sometimes he brings in Dal Christensen. So Rashad kind of builds his own camp based on what his needs are, uses who he feels is right. But Rashad and I really haven't talked in a bunch of months other than, hey, how you doing on text? So he had no idea what my plans were. So when he made those comments, it was really his opinion. So we are staying open, and I just have felt no need to like really like explain to the press, because no matter what you say, it comes out in most cases different, and then you have people telling you to go F yourself on media, and all you did was try to speak the truth. So the truth is that the plan was always to move to a bigger location, the plan was always to move to a temp location. Henry was already training in another gym that he made some deal with, and it was very hard to get the guys to want to train everywhere. So some people, then when Henry's contract was up, he sent me a term. But a month before his contract was up, he was already telling me, like, listen, I'm going to go to Toronto when I get back. You know, maybe I only go down to 2 days a week. We'll talk. But he never would get on the phone with me again. So I never actually spoke to him after that. So he's a great coach. I wish him the best, but you know, Neil Mallison's still with us. He's the head coach. And if you really look at our statistics, we really started winning, going on a huge roll of winning when Neil joined the team.
Oh, Neil's amazing. I'm so glad you got him out there. So, Glenn, you said a lot of things there, and I didn't want to interrupt you because I'm learning. I wanted to stay with it. But just to make sure that I did have this right. So the Black Zillions is still open. The team still exists, and you guys are still moving forward.
Yeah, the team still exists, and, you know, people still training with Neil right now. Because we're not in our full-time facility, I've just been kind of laying low because there's no reason to do other. Tyrone Spong is taking over as our head striking coach, and I don't think anyone could discount Tyrone Spong's credibility.
Of course.
As a fighter or a coach, or else I'd like to see him try.
Yeah, they're welcome to try.
Yeah, Tyrone Spong is he's an amazing person. When I was sick, this guy brought me food like every day to make sure I ate. He would sit next to me when I was doing my IVs. I mean, he really is an amazing person. And I'm fortunate to have him in my life. And, you know, so he's taking over as head striking coach. Neil Mallison's the head coach and is still going to be in charge of grappling. Yeah, so we're still moving forward in all areas and just going to be a little bit of a different dynamic.
Because yeah,
some people aren't going to want to leave Henry, and that's okay. You know, I mean, that's fine, and we'll see who prevails.
Yeah, well, and Glenn, that is a pretty normal progression in MMA. The way that I had heard the story, and again, this is why I really wanted to talk to you, and I appreciate you coming on and clearing some of this up, but the way that the story was told, and again, it was those brief moments that I heard while I'm waiting to go on to Ariel's show, but I thought, geez, Black Zillion closed up. I can't believe I didn't hear about that. I talked to Neil Melanson all the time. I've been working with him for years. He's always represented that he was out there with the Black Zillions. I know Michael Chandler's out there. I talk with him all the time. And I thought, where did this come from? This must have happened this morning at 8 a.m. because as of yesterday, the Black Zillions were still going strong. So I appreciate you clearing that up. Let me ask you something, though, along this vein. One thing that I have experienced in MMA, and the business side of MMA for me, Glenn, has been extremely disappointing because it lacks loyalty. It lacks that specific camaraderie.
In three camps with us, and you know, I said to his management, the first camp we're going to do free, see if you like it, and then now it's with Josh Thompson, but then Josh didn't play, and then he ended up getting Patricky Pitbull later, came back to that camp. When he did his camp with Benson Henderson, you know, that would have one would have been due income to the gym, and we contacted his manager for the fight and said, like, you know, what's it, we got, you know, let's work this out. And about 2 weeks after the fight, his management called us and said he gave a bonus to Neil and Henry, and he's done. He's not paying anything else.
Wow. Yeah, so he went to the coaches and not to the gym. It's surprising the lack of honor that you see, and it's always so disappointing. But tell me what it was like.
How honor the fighters switch it to somehow they flip it. So it's not them not being honorable. It's, well, because of this, I did it for this reason. Like, yeah, I mean, they don't understand, like, well, what have you done for me lately? Okay, how much have you paid in training? You pay less than someone who goes to LA Fitness, but you get, well, your world-class coaches.
Yeah, Glenn, as you know, anybody that owes money finds a million different excuses why they're not going to pay it. But I look at how disappointing some of the loyalty is in MMA and how some of the handshake deals go out the window. But here's my perception.
It's very disappointing.
When I look at you and what you went and did, and frankly, so did your rival, Dan Lambert, but you guys really did everything different. Most gyms, including the one I started with, we had a great thing going, but we just had a group of guys, and we had one piece of Resolite, and it was dirty, and nobody even knew who was going to clean it every day. It was unorganized. We had no shower. We had no weights. We didn't have coaches. We just had some guys that got together. It all built from there. But I looked at what you did. You've got this world-class facility. You got the best coaches. You've got the best workout partners. You guys even had cool outfits and a cool team name. I mean, you really ran it like an NFL-style franchise. And I just thought, if there's anybody that people are going to appreciate and take care of on the back end, it's going to be Glenn Robinson. And as I sat back, and again, I'm on the West Coast, you're on the East Coast, but I observed this pretty closely. It appeared to be just the opposite to me. I'm watching these guys come, and I'm watching them go. I'm listening to some of the things they're saying. It's like, guys, I don't know what you're expecting or what you're used to, but what Glenn is providing for you is state-of-the-art, and it's done nowhere else. You guys should have a little appreciation or come out to the garage we're training in Oregon and see the other side of this coin.
You know what's sad is that one of our greatest advocates was Jordan Parsons, who passed away. And I just created the Jordan Parsons Foundation, so I'm going to make sure his memory goes on forever. It's a nonprofit organization. But Jordan used to say to me that the guys don't know how lucky they have it. They have no idea what other gyms are like. I've been there. It's nothing like this. We had two strength and conditioning coaches. We had two striking coaches. We had, you know, we had backups to backups to backups. I mean, everything the guys can need, from body testing to whatever was done. And I'll tell you, I don't have any grudge against Dan Lampert. Like, I never really did until he, like, came after me and sued me and went nuts. And but in retrospect, you know, we started because George, Jay-Z, Danilo, and Uri left ATT. And in retrospect, I can understand now why the their appearance of a lack of loyalty would frustrate him. But more importantly, when there was a point when, and, you know, the real story has never still been accepted, but what happened between us was Conan Silveri was trying to get me to open up an ATT. And Conan wanted me to call it just ATT Conditioning Center. And he said, don't worry, we'll do jiu-jitsu later. And I said, does Dan know about this? And he's like, yeah. I said, so I want to meet Dan. I said, I don't want to anything about this. So me, Dan, and Conan met at the Moonlight Diner in Cypress Creek, not too far from Dan's office. And one of the things Dan said is, I'm warning you, this business sucks. There's a lot of lack of loyalty. I forgot his exact words, so I really don't want to quote him. But he basically kind of warned me, and I should have listened to him. But I was naive, and I could tell you that I have dealt with, you know, the things I've dealt with. I mean, I used to visit Tiago Silva in prison 3 times a week. I can't even tell you the things I dealt with because, I mean, I've dealt with some crazy-ass shit. And I have given these guys everything I could, and some people have been really loyal to me and have stood by my side. And other people talk speeches about loyalty, saying, you know, what, you know who's there for you when the chips are when you're down. And yet, then when I had a little bit of a rough spot, they kicked me in the face.
Welcome to the mixed martial arts world that we know it.
Yeah, Glenn, if I could have grabbed you years before you started, I'd have told you the same thing Dan did, man. It is a rotten, dirty business, and I watched how you threw your arms around it and poured yourself into it. And sadly, I knew all along he doesn't understand the miscreants that come into this business. I'm glad you had some good experiences. I'm glad you met the Tyrone Spongs and the great guys, too. But it really is a rough industry, and it's one. This happens in all walks of life from a psychological standpoint, but it's the old expression, if you give them an inch, they will take a mile. But I personally have never seen anything like it that makes that expression truer than the guys in MMA, and particularly the guys that you brought up that were absolutely spoiled. Whether you're ready to admit that now or not, Glenn, you spoiled those guys. And again, if they came out here to the garage...
He gave money to this guy. I didn't do that. What I did is made sure they had everything they needed to train as if they were in the NFL.
Right. Oh, I watched it. Just looking at your facility that's got saunas and showers and changing rooms, I'm telling you, there's another side of the coin. And I grew up in it in the back of a car lot out here in Oregon. And our guys were pleased as could be. We were just happy to have a mat and a workout time. But yeah, you did bring them in a different way. And when you spoiled them and created that mindset, it's not fair that it happened to you, but I watched it happen, and they became unappreciative.
You know, it was funny. They'd be like, hey, man, I need sponsors. And I'd say, hey, you got like 18,000 followers on Instagram, and you get 119 likes on a picture. What are you going to get back to a sponsor? So a sponsor gives you money. What do they get back? Love and appreciation? Half the times you get a sponsor and then you go, hey, you got to put this shirt on and do this quick video. I ain't putting that shirt on. And then, you know, you say to them, like, well, be realistic. Like, you know, the heyday of sponsorships in MMA ended a long time ago. I remember there was a point where Tap Out was paying $50,000 to a fighter to wear, $75,000 to a fighter to wear clothes for one fight.
Yep.
That's gone. The companies are gone. All that's gone. Reebok is in. And so now you don't even have the, oh, your name is going to be on the cage and hit them emotionally. to be able to, you know, try to get sponsorships. So it's got to be real hardcore people that just want to help fighters. It's really more of charity than sponsorships.
Yeah, it's a handout. Because,
yeah, it's really like, all right, I really like this fighter. I'm going to give him some money. That's what it really is. Because if someone's getting 119 or 180 likes on a picture, and you're going to advertise a product for them, it, you know, I mean, even if 1%, which would never happen, bought, I mean, 1% of 119 people, I mean, it's just not realistic.
That's not a lot of merchandise selling. Yeah, hey, and yeah, that, Glenn,
I don't get so, and then they sit there and say, but I've already had 6 fights in the UFC. I deserve. Yeah, well, you know what? 200 other guys had 6 fights in the UFC, and another 100 had 8 fights. Another 100 had 20 fights. Like, what the hell is your point? Like, there's a million guys out there. Like, you have to do something for them. You have to give back. You have to. My daughter has a YouTube channel, and she has 185. She's 16. Has 186,000 subscribers to her YouTube channel, and she's making close to like $60,000 a year. But she worked at it. She worked at it. She put a video. She worked and hustled for it. And then I go to fighters. Hey, why don't we build a YouTube channel? We could do this and this and this. And it sounds like too much work.
It's the word you use there is charity. And I've watched this sport, Glenn. I've watched it from the back of my car dealership in 2000. And it's changed. It's the people that came through back then fought for almost nothing, and they fought because they wanted to see who was the toughest around. The word charity should be demeaning to some, in terms of if I come to you, Glenn, and I say, Glenn, I would like you to give me charity. I'm basically begging you with that word. If we change sponsorships to charity, the fighters still won't care. They'll come to you and say, hey, I want charity and I deserve it. Yeah, there's no money in this business. There's no money in this business. If you made any, you made it for a minute. And I thank you for everybody that didn't thank you. If you had 10 people that you wrapped your arms around and filled, gave them everything they needed for quite a bit of time. And at first, when you were doing all those things and you were coming to them, you got a bunch of, you got a baskets of thank yous. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. How many of those people are left?
None.
There you go. There you go. And that is right there. That is the business of mixed martial arts. There isn't anything clearer than that.
There are some good guys. Like Tyrone and I still work together and always will. There's a young up-and-coming kid we have named Tyrone Claxton. He was an All-American wrestler, and he's, you know, he's definitely going to be a future champion. But he's a good kid. He works in my office. He works at 3 jobs. And then there's people who come to me and they want to be like, well, I have people who came to me that would not even in the UFC or Bellator say, I need a car. All right, what do you want me to do about it? I mean, literally, they look at Rashad and they want to be Rashad, but what they don't know is Rashad worked in a bar, a morgue, and trained. But Rashad didn't just walk out of his house one day and become a fighter and go straight to the UFC. He worked multiple jobs, all hours of the night, killed himself to get to where he is.
Yeah, there's two versions of all of us. The version that we have of ourselves and then the real version. And what happens with most of these fighters is as soon as they get 3 or 4 amateur victories, they need to be the next best thing. They don't want to go to the guys that pave the way, the guys that have done it, have stair-stepped their way to the top. They don't want to do that. They want to take the first step, and that's where somebody helps them out. They want to win 2 fights, and they want to be at the top. And when they don't get there, because there's no work involved, there's no blood, sweat, and tears involved, there's just me, 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 then they want to point the finger. And that guaranteed that's what's happened to you and everybody else that has never even made it to your heights. You know, just think about all of the little gym guys that trained these fighters for free. Then they win 2 fights, and then they sign with somebody. I've seen it over here for years, And it's still going on. There's a guy right now out there. I don't know who he is, but he's out there. He's in somebody's ear saying, hey, here's what I'm going to do for you. And it doesn't make any sense. If the guy would just, the guy he's saying this to, if he would just look at who he is and say, hey, man, I've won two fights. I'm nobody. I wasn't even a very good wrestler in high school. I don't know how to box that well. Why in the hell is this guy telling me I'm going to be the next best thing? Well, he's going to listen to that idiot. And that is what keeps this business down. And then on the opposite side of it, very few people are well healed. You came into this business with money in your pockets, I assume. And that money's drained out. But the fact of the matter is...
there's a certain amount of money I was willing to go. And when I reached it, I wasn't willing to go anymore in the way I was. I mean, the coaches were paid very well, and they were all good people. They were all good people, but, you know... So, Chell, who would you say was our best coach? Outside of, you know, is it Neil, or who would you think was our best coach?
Well, you know, I like what Neil is doing. I know he's a bit of a late addition. It's just I have an experience with him. Everybody that got to work with Tyrone Spong, you know, Rashad, AJ, those guys are all ranting and raving. One of your best. I think, you know, I like that Greg Jones is out there. Frankly, I think he's doing a great thing.
Yeah, those guys are working hard. But there's a lot of people that this business is a lot of smoke and mirrors too, and there's a lot of people that live off of an image they never really had. You know, I was told a saying by somebody in Amsterdam that in the land of the blind, one eye is king. And I know it's different versions of that all over. Every country has a slightly different version of the same statement, but it's really true. If you don't know what's going on, and the other person does, that other person's king. And we live in a world that is a bubble. Like someone said, don't you care what people say about you on MMA? I said, on social media, I'm like, I just don't hit the button on my phone, and then no one said nothing.
Yeah.
It's just a bubble. It's just a bubble. I mean, I've been very good to everyone. And when they were down, I picked them up. When they got arrested, I bailed them out. When they had problems with women, I was there for them no matter what the problem was. And I'm referring to like minor staff, stuff like that. When they needed money for food, I was there for them. When they had a problem legally, I was there for them. When they had a variety of, I mean, issues beyond issues, I would always do my best to take care of them. Then the first time you say, I can't do that, it's like, what do you mean? It's a tough business because it's what you did for me yesterday. There's some good people. Like, you know, Anthony Johnson's a great person, and I really believe he'll win the title. And, you know, but I have respect for Rashad, although we don't work together anymore. And he has his opinions, and I have mine. I always feel it's best for us, since we are so close, to leave our opinions to ourselves. Like, when he made that little comment, he probably thought it was a passive comment, but I have kids. And my kids had to go to school and hear, because social media is so prevalent now, what's the matter with your father? What's the matter with your father all day? And I mean, Rashad didn't realize he was doing it, but that's the world we live in, where a comment you make today has ramifications and a domino effect on a lot of other people. So Rashad would never try to hurt me. He's a great person. I mean, he's an awesome person, but we live in a world where social media is king. That was my point. And social media out trumps truth. So whatever's on that social media, that's the truth. You know, and I get people death threats. I get people telling me to go fuck myself. I tell people they don't have a clue what's going on, but they tell me how to run things. So there's some good people. I'm glad I met Rashad. You know, Anthony's an awesome guy. Tyrone will always be a huge part of my life. But from moving forward, I need a different culture, and the culture has to be one where people have to. People know what they have and respect it.
Yeah.
And civilians aren't going anywhere. And, you know, maybe it's not going to be the same as it was because, you know, we don't have Henry Hooked. And you know, Henry's a great coach, and I have nothing but respect for him. He did what he felt he had to do for his life, and, you know, that's his prerogative. But I don't think that anyone could doubt that Tyrone Spong is lesser of a coach.
Oh, yeah, no doubt. I wouldn't question any of those guys. You know, Kenny Monday was great. Mike Van Arsdale was great. Boy, Greg Jones is, I mean, come on, you're talking about the same page. You certainly don't need any advice or business advice from me. You've done a great job. But if I could give you a nickel of free advice, and maybe we'd need a time machine, you would have had it done this years ago when you started, but it would simply be to say no a little bit more often, because I have watched, and Glenn, you are a little bit too damn nice. I mean, quite frankly, that is the biggest knock. True. You've been too nice, and you said yes too many times. And that's a reality. Take that how you will, but that is true.
No, you're right. That was what Rashad said in Ariel Helwani, and people called me up, and they're like, I got all these calls from news reporters, like, do you want to comment on Rashad said? I said, but Rashad didn't really say anything that was a lie. I mean, he said what was going on now, which was there's people training in different locations. He said that teams splintered some. It has. And he said that I said no too much. I said yes too much, and I did. So he didn't say anything that wasn't the truth. You know, so, I mean, the only thing he said is that the team is completely gone and he doesn't think we'll start over, but or however it was said, I don't remember. But he didn't know what our plans were. We didn't have an opportunity to speak. So the team's still going to exist. We're still going to go on. We're still going to create great fighters. And it's still a passion. I still enjoy it. I enjoy seeing somebody who went from, you know, maybe starting out from just this point of struggling to getting to a point where they're achieving greatness. And I like to help people. I truly do. I'm not looking to get rich off this business, because you're never going to get rich. You're always going to lose money. And listen, you know, Eric Delfino is a fireman, and he comes to the gym in between. And that's just what I heard. I don't know for a fact. And everyone's got their stories, but there's a million stories out there, and who knows which is true. But what I could tell you is that the Black Stallions aren't going anywhere. We are going to be a little bit of a different team, but that doesn't mean we're going to be any worse for it. I will say I know a whole lot more, and I really realized who was there for me and who was not over the last few months, because there are people that I've been there through for thick and thin, and then when things got a little bit hot and heated because some people were turning against me for no reason, they joined that road. So it is what it is, but I take it with a grain of salt.
Yeah. Well, Glenn, we can leave it at that, man, unless you've got anything else you want to get off your chest. I'm just happy to hear the Black Zillions are still around. I was a little bit misled, but like I said, I only heard those couple of minutes. That's why I reached out to you and said, hey, man, can you come clear a few things up? So it sounds like onward and upward.
It's onward and upward. The past is behind us. You know, today's a new day, and we're just marching forward.
All right, cool. Very good. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you for the time.
Thanks, Joe. You're awesome.
All right, take care, pal. Hey, there it was right there, you know, and I did not know that, Joel. When I heard the little clip that Rashad had given to Errol, I did think that the gym was closed. And so I had that wrong. But I talked to Neil all the time, talked to Michael Chandler all the time. I know Anthony Johnson's got a big fight coming up, but I'm going, wait a minute, these guys are sounding like they're at practice right now. But what I gathered from Rashad, and it sounds like I just misunderstood, but what I gather from Rashad is, hey, the gym's closed. I mean, like, quite literally, you went up to the door, you locked it, and hand the key back in to the landlord. And it's like, well, no, these other guys are saying they're at practice at 3 o'clock. So there it was. And Glenn, I didn't think, sounded scorn at all, but I think he is a little bit more realistic of what he got into. And I've just seen so many guys, Joel, as have you, but they jump into this space thinking, hey, if I come in and I treat people better than anyone else ever treated them, then great things are going to happen. And in the world of capitalism, that is largely true. If you treat your customer, you have better customer service than the next guy, at better rates and a better facility, you rise to the top. In every walk of life, I can't really think of anything in America where that statement isn't true. But capitalism really doesn't work in MMA. You have all sorts of different cultures, particularly at the Black Zillions. You have all sorts of different mindsets. You have all sorts of different outlooks. And the one thing that I observed, and you know, when you and I come on here, so many times we sound negative towards the fighters. But Joel, so many times we are, because the fighters that are stepping into today's world have a different reality than the guys that were around in the 90s. When it was still called no holds barred, because the term MMA didn't even exist. Guys today can't even relate to that. They'll go, well, no, MMA's been here forever. It's like, no, it didn't. That term was created in 2001. There was a time when there was no such thing as an MMA gym. There, you had to do your boxing on this side of town, your wrestling on that side of town, work with your buddies in the garage here, and on Saturday night just try to put it all together. That's an unorganized, that's a bad time. That's not something to celebrate. But when you go through that, and then you see a Glenn Robinson giving these guys a commercial space in one of the most beautiful cities in America, bringing in the top coaches that he has to fund. You heard him say his contract, and he brought up Henry Hoof and said his contract was December 31st. There's guys right now, Joel, in 2017 that are going to hear Glenn say that and go, what? I don't have a contract. You're telling me a businessman gave me a contract that had terms and obligations, and he was obligated to me, and he honored. There's no such thing, man. It's all a handshake. Glenn Robinson came in and ran it like a real business.
The reason.
But this is how he was thanked. This is how it worked out. And, man, that is a little bit frustrating to me because I did watch the revolving door over there, and I'm going, guys, come out here to Oregon for a little bit. Just by an example, not that we've got it hard out here in Oregon, but boy, we do compared to what he's providing them out there in Florida. And I bring up his nemesis, Dan Lambert, too, because even though those two guys have a personal beef, those two guys, outside of the old Zuffa and the leadership we saw, outside of those guys, Dan Lambert and Glenn Robinson have done more for this sport. When you talk about changing people's lives, bringing them in, making it professional, giving professionalism, treating people right, putting money and resources in it to it. Those two guys, because of their rivalry, has done more for MMA than anybody, literally, than anybody ever outside of the leadership that, you know, kind of got the sport off the ground. Literally, those two guys, and neither one of them are thanked. And I don't think Dan Lambert's a scorn. I think he saw the olden day and kind of knew, hey, there's going to be some guys coming and going, and I'm just going to have some fun with it. But I think Glenn really had his heart in the right spot, and I think in many ways he probably got his heart broke.
Well, of course, but you got to look. This is not a team sport. This is the biggest problem in this sport. It's not a team sport, and there's only so many weight classes. So when you come up through the amateurs, and it's you, and let me do Team Quest. You come up at the sport. At one time, there was you, Chris Lieben, Nate Quarry, and Ed Herman, all at one weight class. So sooner or later, somebody's going to be in somebody's ear saying, hey, you need to go somewhere else to get different instruction. That dynamic will never change. All the people that went to Black Zillions started somewhere else. That's the open and shut case in this sport. It's not a team sport, and when you think it is, you're going to get bit.
Yeah, that's true. And, you know, it really is the nature of the beast, and it makes me mad at the sport and some of the guys. But, you know, the guys aren't wrong either. They're just, you just kind of have to know what you're getting into. You're getting into a greedy, unappreciative space. You know, I'll give you an example, Joel. And the team is so important for me. You know, MMA is a different spot now. There's some money in it where you can make a living. There's some fame in it where, you know, you can get somebody to come pat you on the back and make you feel good and different motivations. But when we started in the back of your car lot, there was none of those things. There was no money. There was no fame. This is just what we wanted to go out and do. We were wrestlers. You were in wrestling to figure out who was the toughest, and it transferred over to MMA, and that's what it started. So what you got, though, what you got that got you in the gym every day and got you sacrificing and got you going through really what's a ridiculous idea. You know, in today's world, it's very seductive and intriguing and professional and well-ran, but not if you run the clock back to 1997 when I had my first fight. I mean, it wasn't on TV anywhere. There was no such thing. Even the pay-per-views that we could put on a VHS, some kids won't even know what I'm talking about, if you could imagine, but a VHS, you go down to the local Blockbuster or Hollywood Video like we had out here in Oregon, and you rented it 3 months after the fact, but it wasn't spoiled for you because the internet was just coming out. If you can even imagine that. People didn't have emails and a .com this and a .com that. You couldn't get that information, so it was like seeing it for the first time. The point that I'm trying to make, the one thing that you really got from it that kept me involved is this was my country club. This was my social life. This is where I went to see the guys and talk and visit. And, you know, you become friends. You get involved with their life. You know their struggles. Some of them are bringing their kids in, and, you know, you got to babysit. They couldn't afford babysitters, so I'd be babysitting in between rounds while dad's out there sparring. Then they come out, then I go in. I mean, it's just kind of what it was, but there's a major camaraderie in that. And the Ultimate Fighter came about, changed the industry. And Joel, to this day, I have one teammate. And we had, as Team Quest, we had tremendous success in getting guys onto the Ultimate Fighter. Randy, who was the first coach ever, he and Chuck Liddell, and because Randy was the first coach, boom, he had the in. He had everybody's ear. Who do you want on your team? He was pushing. He was bringing our guys. So Team Quest was a major hotbed to feed the Ultimate Fighter. To this day, and I think that started, the first one was in 2004. I think it aired in 2005. Could be off by a couple of months there. But the point is, over 12 years, I have one teammate that has ever gone through the Ultimate Fighter that is still my teammate. If you went on the Ultimate Fighter and we were teammates and you're out of Team Quest, it was a guarantee I was never going to see you again. You know, because those guys, we had it really rough at Team Quest. It was in the back of your car dealership. It was a mat. We didn't have the weights and the bikes. We didn't have, a kickboxing class at 3 o'clock and a jiu-jitsu class at 4. We didn't have any of those things. We had Robert Fallis trying to figure it out the best he could. We had us athletes in there trying to absorb as much as we could and work hard. It was just a different scenario. So when those guys went off to the Ultimate Fighter, beautiful facility and coaches and a little more organization, stuff that we couldn't compete with because there was no money. There was no money for Robert, let alone for Robert to go out and bring in other coaches. This was really a, hey, we're all going to just make the best of it that we can. So guys would go off, you'd never see him again. Then you see a Glenn Robinson. So if you ended up on the Black Zillions, okay, and the same goes with ATT. You're waking up on third base thinking you hit a triple, thinking, oh, you know, it's even better on the other side of the fence. The grass is greener. It's like, guys, let me tell you, it's not. You are in the delicrim of cities, of weather, of coaching, of teammates, of an atmosphere. This is the delicrim. But the mindset that the guys that go out to the Black Zillions in the ATT is the same as the mindsets of the guys that were in the back of the dealership on a piece of Resolite that one of us would think to mop once a week.
Well, what's happened here, and the work's the same. Evan Tanner and Randy Couture used to go to the dealership at 7 o'clock in the morning, and they would do plyometrics. And remember that lifting thing, the 7 sets with the bar that Randy
sure
invented? What was that called? Do you remember?
No, but I know exactly what it was, where you pick the bar up and it was sets of six.
You
had to do it 8 times. Yeah.
You go through 8 times. That work.
Sixes. In fact, that's the name of his workout. Sixes.
Okay. That work hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is the environment. And now there's a coach with a whistle telling him what to do. The work hasn't changed. The toughness hasn't changed. My point is that you don't need some big facility that's beautiful that everybody can look at. You just need a place to go and somebody to hold the clock.
Sure.
And somebody to keep you accountable. That part has not changed.
Yeah. I've never seen a gym owner get roughed up before. I've really only seen it happen to Glenn. And athletes, I think, are completely fair game. They put themselves in that spot. And part of what is going to earn you the paycheck is the negativity. A lot of people are going to want to see you get beat up. That's what this industry is. A lot of people are going to want to see you beat up the other guy. That's what the industry is. And I think a fighter just needs to accept that. And when they don't, and when they get their feelings hurt, I don't get it. I laid an egg last week, took all sorts of heat for it. Well, I should have. I understood that, though. There's a contract and there's a way that works. Not just your contract with the promotion. There's also a deal with the fans. They are expecting something of you that you are promising to deliver. I do, and I think that athletes need to be subject to that and understand that going in. I do feel that a gym owner like Glenn, who has poured his time, his money, his heart, his soul, and created something that cannot be matched except by his greatest rival over there at the ATT. They have separated themselves from the pack tenfold in terms of the way they treat people. Gets nothing for it. Absolutely nobody's writing him a check. Absolutely nobody's patting him on the back. He's doing this all for different motivations, which is selflessness to help people. I do feel like someone like him needs to be off limits. And I'm all for fans cheering or booing or letting any emotion they want out. But I've never seen a gym owner who came out, who did everything right, who looked out for other people, has nobody looking out for him, be so disrespected for no reason. Have you?
No.
Yeah, I just haven't. I just can't remember. I can't remember time. All right, I see you've got some notes. I think Glenn cleared all that up. Look, the Black Zillions are still going. Some of those media reports were wrong. Let's move on. You've got some notes in front of you. What do you want to share?
I got some things here we can do next week. I got the BetDSI prop bets.
Okay.
We'll go over these
for
next week.
Or are you talking about for the Super Bowl?
For the Super Bowl.
Okay.
They're prop bets.
Because the Super Bowl's next week.
Next
February
week. We'll
5th.
Go over these
is
next
that
week.
But Hold on. Is that correct? It's February 5th?
It's next Saturday, Sunday, whenever that is.
Next Sunday.
But anyway, I got a whole list of these. We'll go over this next week. Kind of like, one of them is Lady Gaga's hair color during halftime show. Blonde or yellow, brown, pink, purple, white, or blue.
BetDSI is taking action on that.
Absolutely.
Those guys are crazy.
Everybody does. That's what's so fun about the Super Bowl. We'll close out this show with the Nicky Bones.
What do you got?
Okay, first off, we're going to retire the celebrity Nick Bone.
I heard you say that yesterday to Askren. Why? Why is that?
Well, because you said we were going to just go with two of them.
Oh, okay. All right. So I'm part of that. Okay.
You said we were going to stay with the mean tweet and the story of glory.
I love the mean tweet.
And then what also happened is I got to spend some time with Jakey Baby and his beautiful gal, Mackenzie. Or is it McKenna? God damn it.
Mackenzie.
Had it right. And he said, listen, I'm in negotiations with the UFC to get a fight, and they want me to go ahead and give up the Nick Bone. So I said, all right, we'll just, you know, you're a three-time champ. We're just gonna retire the Nick Bone. So what we're going to do, we're going to give out one story of glory, and the story of glory has to go to my buddy Scott Davenport, who came down, flew with Ladd, took a $50 ticket and turned it into a front row ticket. He had pictures with Scott Coker and Gino Carano and Ty Woodley, everybody you could think of. Then when he gets back here, his car is stolen. And we found out yesterday that somebody had stolen his car and drove it into the woods from West Lynn. We want to talk about the mean streets of West Lynn. Stole it from West Lynn, drove it into the woods, and burned it. And he ended up hitchhiking home. So Scott Davenport gets the story of glory. And whoever Mike Collazo is, wherever you are, Mr. Davenport wants to fight you. So contact somebody.
I know right where Mike Collazo is. I don't know why you tell that story on here without having the backstory. You need to find that out. And I agree with you to Scott Davenport. If you get your car stolen and then you hitchhike and later the police call you and your car has been parked in the woods and set afire, yeah, I think you get a Nick Bone.
Okay.
I think you might have just set the bar.
That's true. Now you actually gave this guy, I got to find him in my phone. You gave Joseph Morales the mean tweet. I disagree with you. I think this was pretty good. It says, Tito was so terrible at telling the lion story, I literally wish even Joel was telling it. He was that bad. I had better ones, but Mr. Morales, if the king pit of the world, JLP Sonnen, tells you got a Nick Bone, brother, then you got one.
Yeah, because you know what I liked about it? I like the humor to it. You know, the mean tweet isn't about trying to make a guy cry. That's a dick tweet. No, a mean tweet is, there's got to be a level of humor involved. I thought he had a level of humor. I thought it was funny.
And then I'm going to throw just one extra out because we need more. Yeah, I've got two things to cover. Sydney Harris, you get a Nick Bone for being one of our female fans, and we need more of them. And you're hot, so you get the hot Nick Bone. But it's the last one we're giving out. From here on out.
Who got the hot Nick Bone?
Sydney Harris.
Okay.
All right. Now, what I want everybody to do, we're pushing up.
Sydney is female, I'm assuming?
Yeah.
All right.
Good call.
That there's anything wrong. I'm just asking. All right.
What we need to do is we're pushing up. We want to get to 1 million listeners. We're well over 500,000. We're pushing up on 700,000. But what I've noticed is people have a hard time trying to figure out how they can download the podcast. So I want the loyal listeners to go find two people that will listen to the show and show them how to put it right on their phone for me.
Yeah, all right. There's a nice plug. I didn't know people were having a hard time finding it. But I can't complain. When we started doing podcasts, I thought podcast was two words. P-O-D space C-A-S-T. That's how much I knew about it, or I guess I should say how much I didn't know about it. So yeah, I suppose maybe there are some people that don't know how to get a podcast. I'm inundated in that world now. I'll tell you this. I had shared with you a couple of days ago that I was going to be competing with Gary Tonin in the Submission Underground. This Sunday, live at flowgrappling.com, 3 p.m. Pacific time for a start for anybody that wants to watch. I'm out of that match. Shoeface, Antonio Carlos Jr., winner of Tough Brazil 3, current...
The guy's name Shoeface?
Yeah, his name's Shoeface.
I love Shoeface.
Well, his name's Antonio Carlos Jr., but when we had to book his plane ticket, that's not even his name. It's like D. Cara... Antonio Zapata Jr. We call him Shoeface, but I mean, it's a long name. It was a hell of a name when we did it online. We couldn't even fit all the letters in. We had to call up to the airline flying him out to spell it out, you know, because his ID has to match. Shoeface. Shoeface is now going to take on Tunin. That's not even the main event.
If I was going to fight Shoeface, you know what I'd say?
What?
Shoeface, what you going to do,
what
face?
What you going to do, face? The main event, Dylan Danis. Who's really taken the grappling world by storm. I would argue he is possibly the most famous grappler out there right now, largely because of his connection to Conor McGregor. But the guy's a straight-up badass. He's taken on AJ Alizarm. It's going to be an amazing contest. AJ's given up a little size, but he does come into this with a couple of world championships. And under the EBI rules, I think that's a pretty interesting match. You've got Jeff Munson coming out. He's going to be taking on Gordon Ryan. They were just in a tournament last weekend. Gordon won the whole tournament. Munson said, well, not so fast. You know, we didn't get matched up. I can beat this guy. Let's see what happens there. A lot of other great matches. It's all going down Sunday. Flowgrappling.com, 6 in the East, 3 o'clock out here in the West. Joel, any closing thoughts?
I do. I just want to thank, you know, we had this show about the wrestling, the pit, in USA Wrestling a couple weeks ago, or last week. And we got a lot of really good response out of it from everybody. And some of it was like, there was some backlash. Like, you didn't mention this guy, and you didn't mention that guy, and this, that, and the other. It's like, man, we can't. We literally can't. And with that said, I truly, truly, truly appreciate people that flew all over the country last week to come watch Chael fight. And I did want to make a special mention to Justin Hatton. He came from Alaska. I mean, that's a trek. So thanks, Justin, and thank everybody that came out. And we'll be back at the drawing board. Well, you already are. The kid's already at practice. So
there you go. All right, until next week. For Joel, I am Chael Sonnen, and you are welcome,
baby.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
Hey, it's Layla from Layla Ali Lifestyle on Podcast One. Now, as an undefeated boxing champion turned fitness and wellness expert, I'm going to be bringing you the information you want to hear on holistic wellness, parenting, fitness, cooking, relationships, and so much more. You can download new episodes of Layla Ali Lifestyle every Thursday at podcastone.com or subscribe at iTunes.